Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also stream at richarddugan.com, and so we encourage you also to click on the link to our guests. It'll take you right to their website where you can get all of the good information that you could possibly ever need so that you can decide whether or not this is a part of the path for you. We encourage you to do that. So go to richarddugan.com. You can go either to the schedules page where we have all of our guests lined up for the coming months, or you can go to the radio shows page where we have all of the programs archived for your listening pleasure and edification as well. Today we're going to be talking with a guest who I think we've talked about this in the past, and that has to do with an individual's take, if you will, on a particular I like to refer to these writings as the ancient wisdom teachings, and this falls under that category of the Tao. And we're going to be talking with a Dr. Jeffrey Fidel. He has a very unique story to share with us here on the program today, and we encourage you to stay tuned because I think it's going to enlighten you in many, many different ways. Dr. Fidel, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
You have a very unique story in that you found not only physical, if you will, health-related, relief, if you will, or balancing, but also mental and spiritual through something that most of us here in the West aren't. We may have heard of it, but we haven't really looked into it. And then I have to say that's one of the downfalls of our educational system in the West is that we don't learn too much about what's going on outside the borders of the United States. And it's to our detriment because there's so much richness, so much vitality in so many other cultures. And in your case, it was and you're going to have to lead me through this because I'm not, unfortunately, that familiar with it. We've talked about it on this program before, the Tao. And is this the same that was written? And I may be incorrect here. Maybe I'm thinking of The Art of War by Lao Tzu. Who was it that wrote the Tao?
The same author. It's Lao Tzu once again.
Okay, so I was correct. Very
You're
good.
You're right on it.
So obviously you sound pretty American to me. You were born and raised in the United States. How did you become exposed and then quite literally influenced by the Tao?
Yeah, it kind of happened a lot by chance. Like most Americans, I was Western taught, and I grew up my whole life very intellectual, so to say. My whole entire life was in intellectual endeavors. By chance, I ran across someone that was working at the hospital and happened to have a copy of this book. And what the Tao enabled me to discover was who I was behind my intellect. In other words, the beingness of who I was, the actual sensation or the feeling of who I was. That's kind of what the Tao enabled me to do. And that's something, like you say, that's not really taught in most Western endeavors. It's there's a strong bend towards the intellectual endeavors and not enough towards the actual beingness or feeling ourselves beyond words themselves.
And it's almost, in a sense, from my observation, it's almost frowned upon. Oh my goodness, you need to go to this author or this founding father or this individual or this school of thought rather than the Tao teaching that you need to go within. There's a real irony there that many of the ancient wisdom teachings, regardless of the name of the philosophy, they kind of all do say the same thing, but we tend to focus on the external manifestations. We tend to focus on, what we can get on the outside.
Yes, society glamorizes the achievement of the outside. We see it time and time again on the media, kind of stressing to excel out. Whether that be at a sport or in the life outside. And the ancient teaching, you say, they go, okay, that's only half the equation, if even. But what is it within ourselves that we can discover? And this is, I don't think in the West that's any attention is given to that, because there's a lot behind even the thinking mind that we can discover within ourselves.
I think one of the other struggles that I have is in many instances with labels. And I'm not saying that they aren't important at times. If I had grown up 10 years later, if I'd been born in 1970 instead of 60, I have a feeling that in the 80s, I probably would have been put on Ritalin or some other medication to calm me down. But from what I learned, and strangely enough, in biology class, boys and girls, they learned differently. And boys, they were energetic because that's just the way they were biologically, physiologically. And, you know, girls were more brainy. They did better in math early on than boys did, and on and on and on. And yet all of these different labels came along. And again, I'm not saying rightly or wrongly, but they just did come along as far as the ADHD and then all of the other acronyms that go along with it. And then as time went by, we started hearing other terms as we went into adulthood, in terms of mental and psychological disorders and or diseases, like bipolar disorder and other mental sufferings, if you will, and mental illnesses or even depression. Matter of fact, I took I was actually asked by my wife before we divorced, kind of tells you where this is going. And her best friend, that I should seek counseling because I was, as they said, depressed. And I acquiesced. I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. I went for four, and I left. Never paid the psychologist or therapist because of what this person was saying. So I guess my question to you is, when you look back, because this is something that you had to deal with, some of these conditions you were suffering through, and the Tao helped you through those situations. Do you find that these conditions, these disorders, are more prevalent today, or is it just that we're more aware, and that in one sense, maybe that is a normal part? Some it's larger, some it's smaller, but still a part of just the human condition.
Well, one of the main things that the Tao teaches is to unname and unlabel anything. Now, this is one of the most difficult things to do. Is as hard as learning something is, unlearning is harder, because surrendering knowledge or giving up names of things is not an easy concept to grasp, because This is the problem with the belief system, even if you want to look at psychology or psychiatry itself. The labels are just that. They're not the reality. If we call one person depressed and we call another person depressed, they're just convenient ways of describing a state of mind. But no person is really depressed. It's just, you know, it's an observatory thing. When a psychiatrist looks at somebody and they say, he's exhibiting these kinds of behaviors when I speak to him, we're going to put him under the category called depression. So it's kind of, it's a scientific means of, or so to say, a dualistic, and this is dualism, is the creation of names from something that cannot be named, and this is what the Tao teaches. So it's not, there's no real truth in the name depression or mania or any of these things that psychiatrists are coming up with. There's not a truth to it. It's just a way to categorize different states of mind under the observation of another. And that's pretty much what it is. It's a book of observation. And then, you know, like any other categories. There's categories for different types of trees and what have you. So to make a science out of human behavior, it could be a very dangerous endeavor because, like you know, we could walk down the slippery slope of almost dehumanizing people and making them a laundry list of labels when, in fact, all humans are complete beings and no words can really, any word used to describe a human being reduces a human into words, and we can't be reduced into words because we're more than that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're all, you know, loving people. There's no words to really describe that, what we are inside. So this is where science is coming into facing some problems. We can't just keep coming up with more and more words and categories. Otherwise, we're just breaking up ourselves into different mental concepts, and we're not mental concepts. That's not who we are as human beings.
Using your example of a tree, there are hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of different species of trees. Not one of them has ever been referred to as a bad tree or a defective tree. And I'm talking species, not individual tree structures. So what I'm hearing from you is that same concept, that there are right now 7.5, maybe close to 8 billion people, human beings on the planet, and there are 8 billion different versions or variations on the theme, as there are variations on the theme of a tree. And that it doesn't make one good or bad, they're just all different.
Well, it's funny because human beings are just like trees. Our minds might tell us differently, but just like a tree, if we stand next to a tree, we can see that we're part of the existence itself, like a tree.
Mm.
It's funny how our minds can make ourselves look like we're separate from what surrounds us, but we're woven into the existence itself. Every human being, if you even look at satellite imagery, or if you look at even what the cosmologists are doing when they're taking a measurement of the universe, guess who else is in that measurement?
Mm-hmm.
We are.
That's right.
We're woven into the very fabric of existence. So we're the existence itself. So when a scientist is looking at the universe, and this is what the Tao teaches, the observer and what's being observed are really the same thing. So it's not like there's life elsewhere. It's that we are the life itself. So when we look at the universe, it's the universe looking at itself, because everything that makes up who we are, and we'll go into science again, you know, the iron in our red blood cells, or all these names we come up with, you know, even the carbon and hydrogens that make up the brain matter, all those are forged in the very stars that we look at. So we are that which looks at itself, so to say. And this is non-dualism, and this concept needs to come forth into the Western thought before more labels you know, just keep coming out.
Exactly.
We're more than we could ever imagine ourselves to be.
Well, and there are a couple things to that. And one of them has to do with the passage. We've brought this up a number of times with many of our guests on different subjects, having to do with what you just stated, that we're there, you know, that we have been told, you know, yes, by one particular spiritual leader, shall we say, who was asked, you know, you're doing some incredible work there. It's amazing the miracles that you're doing. And he responds to them, well, yeah, I know, but you guys can do this, but you guys can do greater things than this, and you will do greater things than this. Someone also said to me that when I asked if our evolutionary process was going to take us to a place where we will finally understand who and what we really are. And I thought the response to it was very interesting. No, we won't find out who we really are. We'll find out who we always have been. I thought that was an interesting distinction.
Yeah, I mean, that's the truth. What we've always been is the existence itself. And you know, this is what the Tao teaches. And if we go to name it with our minds or with the intellect, then it's not that. So if you ask me what my name was, I can't give you an answer. I'm speechless because there's no word. But this is true for any other human being as well. There, no matter how many words that we can use to describe who we are as people,
mm-hmm.
we could give a laundry list, you know, eyes, ears, nose. These are all concepts, but hand someone a list and all their belief systems as well, and they can't recreate the existence that you are. And this is all kind of taught with the Tao, is to just rid all names and stuff, and then the truth kind of comes through in that way, and then we begin to see ourselves as the existence itself, no longer separate from that. This is kind of, this is an ancient teaching, but it's quite amazing that... you know, throughout time, we see time and time again that the mind or the people think that they can figure out existence, but it can't be figured because that which is doing the figuring is part of the existence itself, meaning us.
Yeah.
this is non-dualism, and this is the first sentence in the Tao, which states the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao, meaning... the name of it is not that, because once you name it, it's no longer what it is. It's a name of what it is.
It's almost a paradox.
Science is kind of missing that concept.
Yeah, it's virtually a paradox. It reminds me of that story of the scientists who were conducting an experiment, and of course they would then repeat the experiment, and the result came out differently. And they did this a number of times, not understanding why the experiment came out differently each time. And it wasn't that they were doing anything wrong. It was that every single member of the scientific team was changing and growing and evolving, even in this short period of time. And they were actually affecting the outcome of the experiment. They finally got it in that respect. But, you know, it's one of those things where I remember sitting. I was 7 years old. I was sitting in Mass, Catholic Mass, and I remember hearing the stories about the omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient God, and that he knows what you're going to do before you even do it. I mean, this was what I was told, right? And so I would sit very, very still, and I would suddenly make a movement, whether I had an itch or something. Oh, he knew I was going to do that. And then another movement. Oh, he knew I was going to do that. And I thought I was going to drive myself crazy. And then I thought, I wonder if I can blink really fast. And two blinks together, really close, will be identical. And I did that. And then I started pondering that over the next couple of weeks and realizing that's impossible. Because the universe is in constant motion. So there are no two identical instances in man's construct of time. Any more than there are two identical, even twins. They're still individuals. They're still separate. I wanted to talk a little bit more before we go any further about your book and the title of the book. This is unique. I have never... at first, I thought, somebody spilled ink on the front of my cover of my book. And then I realized, no, that's not a spill. That is actually the title. And it's actually, if I'm correct, it's One, by Dr. Jeffrey Fidel. How did you come up with the title One?
Yeah, so it's basically just a symbol. So, like, it's up to the mind of the interpreter what to make it. So you made it One. Some people say I.
Ah.
Actually, if you put the book horizontally, then it becomes a minus sign.
Mm-hmm.
So a symbol is just that. It has to do a lot with the teachings of the Tao. In fact, I was going to put the book blank, like the White Album, but then I don't think people would have known how to find the book. So this was the issue with the whole naming of the book. But the whole underlying theme of that title is basically as follows, is that a symbol doesn't describe what the entity is, because before we learned any language as human beings, if any baby looks at that symbol, they won't know what to make of it. mm-hmm. and they won't make anything of it. It's only after we acquire knowledge that we then look at that symbol and we make something of it based upon, whether we were exposed to that symbol. If I took that symbol up to Antarctica, no one ever saw, the Arabic alphabet or the Arabic number system.
Mm-hmm.
If they won't come away with that configuration. They might just see that. Maybe they'll identify it with a stick that they've seen outdoors one day or something. So, and this is kind of like what we were talking about before, is the danger of labeling anything. So, this is also how I know myself. I know myself not just as Jeffrey Fidel, but there's actually the unnameable essence of who I am, and that's just like we were talking about before, is that's just the pure beingness or the existence of who we are as human beings, because there's no words for that. Otherwise, we can't be reduced into any language as human beings. Otherwise we don't end up with the human being anymore. We end up with words, and words are not what we are.
It's even been said, too, that our languages, regardless of which language we speak, and I heard just the other day there are like 7,000 languages on the planet, they are so incomplete. They are so, I guess incomplete is the only word I can think of right now, and which is just fine, because I think of the concept of telepathy, being able to telepathically communicate one to the other. And supposedly it's been said that there is a greater understanding through that process because there are no words, that it's sensations, emotional as well. And there are images that are shown. But even images are still a series of symbols. I mean, when you think about it, if I had never seen a tree before, any more than I had ever seen an A in the alphabet, I wouldn't know what that was until I'd had some kind of an experience with that tree. So it seems to me what I'm getting. It's funny how my mind is just kind of racing right now. But what I'm getting from the cover of your book and your description of the title, which if I were, after hearing what you've said, and of course read what I've read in the book as well about the title of the book and the cover, and someone were to ask me, so what's the name of Jeffrey Fidel's book? I couldn't tell them what the title is, because I would, if I told them, then I am now interfering with their process of discovering the title for themselves. Does that make sense?
Yes, because I ran into this very quandary. I didn't know how to write the title. So if you search for it, I think it is officially labeled under the ISBN as I.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way I could put it in. Now,
yeah,
there's a subtitle added to the book just so that it could be searched for. So after the title of the book, I had to say one MD's inward journey to liberate himself from mental suffering. That all was added. Otherwise, no one can find the book.
Yeah.
So I was kind of forced into adding a couple extra words. For the SEO component of, or the searchability of the book. Yeah,
the human component.
But like you were alluding to before, language is a tool and language is reductive, meaning that no matter how refined we ever make language, it can never fully describe anything. It's a convenient tool, but it can't recreate anything. And that's the problem with language. What would we do without language? We can't really communicate. But as you were saying before, the spoken language is much, much more novel than, and this is why we know before we even say a word. If you go back you know, as human beings, maybe 50, 60,000 years, 70,000 years, where before there was language, you know, we still communicated, like you said, on a nonverbal. All you have to do is look at someone's facial expressions. They don't have to utter a word, and you know that they're angry or if they're happy or sad. We don't really have to speak anything.
Yeah.
The language part is a very new, relatively new phenomenon in the evolution of our species. And we have to be careful how far we say, oh, we understand something, because, you know, language is just that. It's a good tool, but, you know, not to hang our hats on whatever we might think it to be.
Well, as we move through this interview, I'm then going to ask you also, for our listeners' sake, to give us a website, if there is one, and there have to be characters in it or it wouldn't be on the web. How would people find out more about you and about your book?
Yeah, they could go to the website. It's www.jeffreyfidelmd.com. And that's JeffreyFidelMD.com.
And that's easy enough. And you'll find out all kinds of good stuff about Jeffrey, about the book, about his work, and I'm sure also references to the Tao, as well as other writings that you have used in your search and your life's work as it has become. And I would like for us...
a lot of what I'm trying to convey, and this is what I'm hoping, to be able to teach people how to feel once again.
Yeah.
In other words, my journey inward, a huge component was allowing myself to feel within myself, even outside of my mind, things that I was subconsciously protecting. In other words, when I broke up with my first girlfriend, for example, I was heartbroken. So part of my journey inward was to actually go back and try and feel my heart again. And, you know, I was scared to go there, so to say, because I didn't want to experience this quote-unquote heartache or pain or whatever it was inside of myself. So a large part of what I was able to do was to sit and just experience that. And there was a tremendous amount of healing just in the experience of going back into the beingness of who I was and feeling that. I was able to heal myself. And this is something that I guess modern psychiatry doesn't... We don't go into the psychiatrist's office and they don't tell us to do that. It's more, you know, we talk about the problems... and that conversation goes back and forth, and you leave with a pill or something, or a diagnosis, but never really going to the etiology. You know, why do I feel this way? So it's to go back into who we are, and that's you know, just to feel again, because feeling is a wonderful thing. You know, I've been able to cry now. I can't remember the last time I've cried. Because I was taught as a child to be a man, you know, that was kind of like how I was grown up, like, don't cry.
Yeah, boys don't, men don't cry.
And all these ideas I had in my mind. So it was breaking down all those things and then being able to reconnect within myself and allowing myself to feel again. Mm.
Jeffrey Fidel's my guest, and we are discussing talking about his journey using the Tao. To bring him forward, both through his health issues as well. And we're going to continue our conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. I'm here with Dr. Jeffrey Fidel, and he has a book that you're going to want to check out. I'm not going to make the mistake again of necessarily repeating the title. I'm going to have you go to the website, even though we've sort of talked about it in the first part of the program. JeffreyFidelMD.com is the web address, JeffreyFidelMD.com. We'll spell that out here in just a few moments. One of the other beautiful things in your book, I love some of the quotes and so forth that you have throughout. This one is fascinating to me, especially because of the query that I put to folks in regards to a particular document that we in the United States tend to want to live by. And there's a passage that refers to how, you know, we are given life and we are given liberty. Those are a given. However, we're not given happiness. We're given the pursuit of happiness. And to that, you have in your book here reference to, I love this, no destination. Happiness is a state of mind. Inner peace is a state of being, which is, I think, a higher, if you will, calling, so to speak, than happiness, because happiness is fleeting. You can have unhappiness, but I think, if I'm correct here, Jeffrey, you can still have inner peace, even if you don't have outer happiness, right?
Yeah, I think the way it is in the West, we're pushing this concept called happiness, and it's almost like that we can get to a state and be happy all the time. And that's not really the way life works. Each situation in life, and life only occurs in the present moment, requires us to just be present and just to engage and feel the moment for what it is. So it's not just being happy all day, because this is what mania is. And I've been in this state of mind, and I could only describe it as torture, because I walked around in a state of smiling all day. Now, some people might think that this is great. We're happy all day, but it's not, because then we can't be, we can't experience life, because life is not about being happy all the time. Life is just about being present and kind of in acceptance of what the moment is, and then naturally responding towards whatever that moment might be, enabling ourselves to just, you know, be present. And this is kind of like the inner peace, just more at ease of what life has to show us, rather than trying to always be in this state called happiness. Because the more we try to be happy, and it could become almost an artificial thing, and the mind just keeps saying, well, why can't I be happy? Why can't I be happy? And that very questioning and that desiring to be somewhere else other than where life is in front of us, it could be a trap, because then we always want something different than what's always before us. And that's, and you know, life just is the way it is. And the more we accept that to be, the more inner peace. And that's why I say it's a state of being, meaning that instead of having to be somewhere to achieve a state of mind of happiness, we just kind of ease into the life as it is, and life goes on, and we accept it for what it is, so to say.
You know, that's interesting, because when we talk about these different states of being that we want to achieve, and we've talked about this concept of attitude of lack. The pursuit of happiness indicates that we don't have it, so we've got to go after it. Or whatever the state of mind, if you will, is that we are wanting, it says that we don't have it already, so we've got to go out and find it. And the reality is, from what I have been taught, is that, and it kind of goes back to what you've quoted in the book here about inner peace is a state of being. If we have inner peace, my feeling is, it's like, okay, at the core of who and what we are, I mean, the true person that we are, there is inner peace. So if we just reconnect with that, there is no deficiency of anything.
Yes, that's the realization, and that's the enlightenment. That's kind of the whole thing, is that enlightenment. It's just that. It's when we connect, we become our true selves, and then we become what it is that we're looking at. In other words, we kind of dissolve into reality itself, and then we know that we're at peace, because that's really what it is, to know ourselves as everything that we see around us is the enlightenment, and then life just goes on. And we find this all inside of ourselves. That's why my whole teaching is that we are our greatest teacher, and these answers are at the core of who we are, and that's at the, it's funny because it's at the core, which is Latin for heart, but, you know, throughout all my teachings, and if you look at all the modern teachings, there's a lot of stress on the mind, you know, they're practicing mindfulness, that, you know, we have all these answers in our mind and that we could figure it out. And what the ancient teachings show time and time again is that the heart is the intelligent one, and that the mind is a useful tool, but our heart or our consciousness is our greatest teacher, because we as human beings, we can never lie to ourselves, because if we do, we know we are. There's always that, you know, there's no way to fool ourselves. We might be able to, you know, fool another person, so to say, but in the end, we end up fooling ourselves, and then that causes a lot of inner conflict. So the less we fool ourselves, the more inner peace we achieve within ourselves, and that's listening to our consciousness or the voice from our heart.
And that's interesting, if we fool ourselves, and again, when you're talking, when you're saying that, it's actually dealing with the mind, the ego, those conscious, more conscious aspects of who and what we are. And if I do understand, I hope I do, that this whole aspect of this inner life, there is a certain higher consciousness about it. It's not subconscious per se, although some might say that it resides there as well, but it's this higher place. And we're all connected at that level, aren't we?
Yes, we are all connected. Everything is connected. We are the existence itself. It is all connected, and this is how but this is something beyond the mind, because the mind is a part of the existence also.
Right, right.
But this is the danger. I think this is why intelligence can have a detriment, because if we consume ourselves with trying to figure out, because of course I suffered immensely for a long period of time until I came to the realization that I can't figure it out, and then now I'm at peace with this, is that every human being, or most that I know, they want to know why they're here. They're looking for an answer. Why are we here? I think that's like a valid, you know, we look all over the place. Why are we here? And then that can actually consume us. We try to figure out why we're here, and that can cause a lot of conflict if that's not surrendered, so to say. And then we just accept, you know, we're here and we're a part of what it is. Otherwise, our minds just keep going and going and going, trying to figure out why we're here. This could only be taught to me by the Tao, which was kind of it says to drop the knife, meaning just give up trying to figure out yourself or why it is. And that's what they mean by drop the knife. Don't cut up things into mental concepts. Surrender to what it is, and then you'll find peace. And that's kind of another one of the teachings, is just to discover yourself as just the same as what surrounds you.
Knowing and being aware of what you know and are aware of now on this side of the journey and where you are today, do you find it difficult? Do you struggle with trying to share this with people, because you have to use words and language that are so inefficient and incomplete? that sometimes it may take you maybe hours to try to explain to someone who is just not getting it, maybe? Or does this seem to come pretty natural to you?
Well, it's my overall goal to be able to kind of communicate these teachings to other people. But in the end, like whether they understand what I'm saying or not, in the end it's going to be up to them whether they're going to want to go into themselves and feel again. So that will be their decision. I guess there'll have to be a little bit of trust that, okay, well, this gentleman, he took a journey into himself, and now he's going to tell me that if I start to feel things within myself that I'll be able to heal. I guess there'll be some trust in that regard. Some people might just say, you know, this is not scientific enough. I'm not going to try to, experience things within myself. I'll wait for the next science journal to come up to prove that there's value to what he's talking about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, but that's unfortunate because to intellectualize who we are is dangerous because science is, it's a useful tool, but it cannot bring us beyond the mind. And to go beyond the mind is to know ourselves in this way, which no words can accompany us. It's just the pure sensation of the feeling of who we are beyond our minds. If we look at ourselves in the mirror, we can't see our minds and we can't see our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And yet most people identify themselves with, you know, I am Jeffrey Bidell, and that's the way I always knew myself, only by thought.
Mm-hmm.
So to know ourselves beyond thought is kind of, it's tricky because we never were taught that. So
yeah.
It's not easy to, this is going to be my challenge. In the end, I want to help people to find their own answers inside. I don't want them necessarily to say, you know, what he's saying is right or wrong. I want them to just listen and then see if they can find their own answer inside because each person has their own answer, and I can't give that to them. I could only say, you know, try this, and hopefully they try it.
Mm-hmm. Well, with this program, what we do is we put out a giant, and after almost after 9+ years of doing this program, it is a large smorgasbord table with all kinds of ideas and concepts and what have you at the table. And we encourage people to go up and take what works for them. You know, if it doesn't work for you, leave it there. You don't need to take it. So we are certainly an advocate of people seeing what resonates for them. Something that I came across in your book here, I find rather fascinating. And again, it's another one of these quotes that you've listed here in the book. And this, you could I remember seeing a television program some years ago of an individual who decided to hold a wedding ceremony. They were the only participant, and this might have been the vow that they would have spoken at this ceremony. That's what sprang to mind. This is the vow, folks. I, self, take you, self, to be myself. I promise to be true to you in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health. I will love you and honor you all the days of my life. I wonder how many people could make and even keep that vow based upon what we've been taught, what we have learned, that, as you said at the outset of this program, that we need to unlearn in order to make that vow and make it stick.
Yes, that is a very important thing. Too often, myself included, I modified my behavior to please other people outside of myself, and that's how I really ran away from who I was, because it was all about, you know, being someone that I wasn't in order to please someone from outside of myself. So the journey inward was pretty much to reconnect with who I truly was and to stop caring about what other people thought about me and just concentrating more on who I truly was. And then that reduced the inner conflict within myself. And now, you know, I'm at peace with myself because I'm truly myself now. And this is wonderful. I don't have to play any games anymore. There was too much game playing, acting in a certain way it's all subconscious, you know, to gain love and acceptance from someone. I'll act like this so that I get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to that realization that, you know what, I was sacrificing who I was to please another, that was one of the insights that allowed me to connect back to who I truly was. And that was, you know, that was the innocent child that I grew up before I was, you know, performing. That's the journey inward, is really the return to the original innocent child that we are. And then that's where we are. We're all humans are that. Go back to the origins of where we are, and there we are once again.
I also like this other passage in your book here. And for those of you who have a copy or are going to get a copy, turn in your hymnals to page 47. My search for, and I'm going to use the word I, has ended. I, my mind, had been looking for answers that were always inside. The answer never left me. The answer is love. The answer was always in my heart. I, essence, and the universe, essence, are one, or I. And it just goes back to just that point that you're making. And I remember at the age of 17, Jeffrey, I started what I referred to as my search. And I was working at the age of, I think, 19 or 20, I was working for a religious radio station, was there for 15 years. And I shared that from time to time with people. And I remember when I shared it with one of the ministers or pastors, they said, well, once you find Jesus, then your search is over. And I said, well, actually, once I find Jesus, my search has really just begun, you know, because I knew there was more. But the true reality is that once you find yourself, that's when the search is over. But that whole process of searching, as you describe, not only in your book, but in our conversation here, it isn't always an easy, it's not always an easy journey, is it?
No, these are places within ourselves that we don't necessarily want to go. I mean, you know, religion is, I think if we look at all religion, no matter what religion it is, they're kind of signposts
mm-hmm.
to how do we find ourselves. And a lot of this has to do with looking within ourselves. We could ask the question, what did Jesus find within himself? What did Buddha find within himself? What do we find within ourselves? Now, if the people are going to go out like Jesus or Buddha and they're going to tell people what they found, they could only use words. But the only way we can know what they know is to find it within ourselves, because the answers are inside of ourselves. And what we find out inside of ourselves is that we are that is. And this is the gift that we have inside of ourselves. This is what the Tao teaches, that every single human being is a Buddha, meaning that if we connect with our hearts, we find our truth. And our truth is that we are part of existence, that all human beings are the same, and that only thoughts in our minds can have it other ways. That we're all born, you know, pure and loving and innocent into the world, and that's how we come here, and we all return to the same. So I guess it's up to each person during their life whether they want to go in and find certain things within themselves. You know, the teachings are one way you know, I utilized the Tao, but by just reading the words, it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. I had to actually do the practices of the book and go into places within myself, all the way to my heart, and that's kind of like where I found myself. And you know, this is kind of what my heart showed me was this, is that we're all the same. Because I didn't know that before I did this inner journey. I didn't view the world as all the same as me. I saw myself more as a separate entity, that the universe was something separate from me, and that I wasn't woven into the existence, so to say. And now I know myself as that. And that's what the Tao enabled me to do, is connect with this very, very deep part within myself.
Let me ask you, from your perspective, your understanding, your awareness through the Tao and just your own personal life experience and inner journey, what your perception and understanding is of the concept of being perfect. There's a passage in the Bible where the quote is, "Be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect."
Yes, but this is the language, and it could be very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and this is what I struggled with, actually, is that being perfect, first of all, there's no perfect without imperfect, because the concept of perfect can't even exist unless there's imperfect. So perfect is just kind of, it's a concept of the mind, to be perfect. So like happiness, we have to be careful. If we're trying to achieve a state of perfection, which I went through, and it became almost like an obsessive-compulsive state of being, meaning that I felt I was never good enough. I was never perfect. So this became a lot of mental suffering occurred because of this word called perfect. What I found inside of myself was, you know, that very thing, that we're not perfect and we can never be perfect. The existence itself of which we are part of is in this condition, and I guess you can say, I don't want to use the word perfect, it's more like it is. This is what we have here. You know, you want to, if we put a word perfect or something, then that kind of can change, because perfect to one person means something and perfect to another might mean something else. The isness of it, the pure, if we look around ourselves or we look at ourselves, this is life, and it's to be accepted. In a way, this is I mean, what more can one ask for, really? And that's to just accept the life as it is. I don't know if you want to say the word perfect with that, but just imagine, like, the fact that we're conscious and we're here, and that's what the problem with the mind can want something else, and it's missing the life that's always right in front of us, and that's right now, even as we speak here right now. This is an amazing thing that's going on. I mean, it's beyond the mind. You know, to take this for granted is almost insane, because just look at what's going on. Like, just the fact that we could have a conversation, that we're, like, conscious beings here, it's beyond all conception. So to take that for granted, I guess that would be imperfect, because one could view this as just being perfect. Imperfect acceptance of what is more maybe what it should, what I get from it when I interpret that.
I think that as I hear you speak, and in this context, my observation was, especially at that time, back in the 80s and going through that period of my life, then this went contrary, of course, obviously, to a lot of the theology and the man-made stuff. But what came to mind was that this word had nothing to do with left, right, wrong, good, bad. It had to do with completeness, that perfection, and basically just as you described, We are perfect as we are. There is no need for anything to change for us to be perfect. It's just that state of being, because if you were to put those other dualistic labels on that word, then you're also putting those dualistic labels on God, because it implies that God could be, and again, this is just a concept here, we're talking in terms of God, that you're implying that God could be good or bad or right or wrong. And the reality is that God just is. I am that I am. And so for us to be perfect as God in heaven is perfect, and again, in that construct, is just to be. And that's the one thing that I found so fascinating when I read that and pondered those things. And I did a little research here and there to try to define the words in the original languages. But, you know, that was helpful, but not entirely. But again, I began to ponder, okay, well, if it isn't the dualism, and we're talking about God here who created everything, you know, then if there's no dualism, then it's got to be that you just be who you are and everything is okay. And you don't have to struggle and strife and fight and fret and worry and all of that. You just be who you are. And you made a very interesting comment, and I went through some programs back in the 80s, some self-awareness programs, you know, like, remember Est? And there was a program called Life Spring, and I went through another couple of programs in Phoenix, Delta and Omega Vector, and these were like intensives, five-day intensives. You'd go like a Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night, and then all day Saturday, Sunday, and you were there to try to dig deep inside yourself to find out what makes you tick and why you are the way you are. Kind of what you were describing earlier, you know, about why I feel a particular way. And you actually did work through it. This wasn't any psychological hocus pocus where they waved the magic wand and poof, your inner child was healed. You had to do the work. You had to face those emotions from your past. And deal with them in a particular way so that you could move forward, you know, peeling the onion. And so when we are trying to find ourselves, that inner self, that core of inner peace that you have described and the Tao describes, was there any point along your journey because of what you had to face within yourself that you kind of stopped and said, you know, I don't know if this is real. I think I'm going to stop here. I've gone far enough. This is good enough. And I will be just fine as is.
Well, the journey in for me, the states of mind that I went through in order to achieve this I went through months of insanity. So this wasn't like, it wasn't a quiet ride in, so to say. Mm-hmm. I was literally, by the way, I mean, the insanity, and this is why I don't suffer anymore mentally.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I live, is that I'm now aware that this was all created by my own mind. This is the realization. This is how I know myself beyond my mind. However, I got lost in so many states of mind, and one of them was the one you just touched upon, the concept of perfection, which unfortunately I got trapped in a state of mind where my mind kept telling me that nothing I did was good enough, and I just got trapped in this repetitive state of thought, like you're worthless, you're no good, you're not good enough, these just being battered by thought. The only way I was able to get beyond that was to still my mind enough, to quiet my mind enough, that then I was able to hear that other voice that we all have inside of ourselves that comes from our heart. And this is what the Tao teaches, is when we get to the very core of who we are, we have this other voice within ourselves. It's hard to hear the other voice because a lot of our own thoughts kind of mask this little voice that speaks quietly. But when we still are thinking minds enough, we can actually start to hear this other voice within us, and this is the voice from our heart or the voice of consciousness itself. And this is really when we begin to learn to know ourselves. And the truer we are to that voice that we all have inside of ourselves, like I said before, then we don't have as much inner conflict.
All right,
When I did this voyage inward, I'll tell you that I did it without a map. I went through, I guess I was on, it's kind of like the voyage to the new world. I got on a ship, and I didn't know that there was going to be, that the ship was going to come back around. For all I knew, I was going to fall off the end of the earth.
Fall off the edge, yes.
I was very fortunate to find the teachings of the Tao.
Before we wrap up the program, let me ask you about this voice. How can I be sure, and I use the word I in a plural sense for others who are listening, how can I be sure that the voice that I am listening to is the genuine, true, inner peace voice of my heart and not one of those voices that is going to tell me to go out and do things that I really shouldn't be doing?
Boy, that question that you just asked is the hardest question to answer. Because what you just said, it took me months to accept that that was the proper voice. And that is quite the trickery. What I had to do, actually, to know that that was the voice was, I questioned this voice for months before I accepted this voice within. I asked, are you loving? And I write about this in my book. Are you truthful? Are you everything that I wanted to be truly as a person? For months I questioned this voice because I wasn't sure. I mean, I was putting all my faith inside of a voice that I couldn't see. So in order for me to trust this voice enough, it took me months. So I guess the best way to answer that question is, I think each one of us knows what we want to be as a person. I think most people want to be loving and truthful and honest. I mean, these seem to be the qualities that we want to be as human beings. I think we share that. That was my journey inward, was to reconnect with those qualities. And then, you know, to get down to that voice, it took me months to get to the core of where I was. And then, like you said, this was the ultimate faith that I had to place everything that I had into this voice, because I had gone so far into myself that there was no way out for me. It was either follow the voice within or go back to a psychiatrist. And I put my life in the hands of utilizing this voice as my teacher. And this voice still is my teacher. Although I'm speaking to you with my verbal talking mind, so to say, now I'm able to listen to myself because I trust myself fully. And so when I hear the voice within, I could trust myself. But it took me a long time to get to the point where now I can trust everything I do. that was the trip in. I wish I had an easier answer for you, but that was kind of it.
Well, it kind of goes back to what you said before in terms of the why. And I remember this was a great phrase that I heard in one of these programs that I went through in the 80s. And it was basically a very simple statement. Give up the need to know why. That was all there was to it. Just give up the need to know why. You don't need to know why. And then of course someone told me many years ago, even before these programs, and I was always asking questions. He says, why don't you leave some questions unanswered so you'll have something to do in the next life? Jeffrey,
it's definitely something that we as humans really we want to know why we're here. And it's just a nice thing to know, at least for me, is that I know that I am a part of what is. And that's a good enough answer for me.
Absolutely. Jeffrey, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us and your story. We're not finished with the program yet because I still have a couple of final questions to ask you. But I want to thank you so much for this time and for your book. The website to go to, folks, is jeffreyfidelmd.com. And that, again, is the spelling J-E-F-F-R-E-Y-F-I-D-E-L-M-D. MD.com, and you can check out his latest work focusing on his experiences with the Tao and his transformation, and we're certainly glad that he shared that with us here on the program. And Jeffrey, if you should ever find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. I think we'd have a lot of fun.
Yeah, certainly, Richard. If I'm out there in California, I'll be there, and I'll bring my son along. I'd like to. He's my traveling companion.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. That'd be great. Now, I have three final questions to ask you, and the first one, I actually thought about this knowing that I was going to be asking these of you, and as our conversation continued, I'm really curious about the answer to this first question, which is, who is Jeffrey Fidel?
Who is Jeffrey Fidel? Well, the simple answer is Jeffrey Fidel was the given name that my parents named me. So who I truly am is beyond that name. This is what I learned, is Jeffrey Fidel, I guess, is a concept of the mind. But the true Jeffrey Fidel is woven into the existence itself. And the true Jeffrey Fidel is, you know, the loving, innocent, truthful person that I came into the world as. That's who he is.
Hmm. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Yeah, so I'd like to be able to give others the opportunity to become their greatest teacher. In other words, to provide them with some of the concepts and practices that I utilize to journey into myself so that they can begin to learn about themselves, not from somebody else, but actually they can learn for themselves so that they know for themselves. Because when they know for themselves, then they know for sure.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to be in complete acceptance of what is before me and to be truthful and loving and caring and just, you know, genuinely trying to help other people find themselves in a way that they could achieve the inner peace that I've now achieved for myself.
I want to thank you again so much for taking so much time with us here on the program. It's been a real joy, and I want to encourage our listeners that if you are listening to the radio broadcast, there's more of this interview. Just go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and the link to Jeffrey's website, as well as to this interview. The full interview will be available to you. We encourage you to listen to it, as well as to go to Jeffrey's website, which again is jeffreyfidelmd.com, jeffreyfidelmd.com. Again, Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.